This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
NBA is winding down, but the real action is just heating up with the playoffs, only three games away for the most part. It is Carlin and Wischusen, Chris and Bob, filling in for Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. In just moments, we're going to be joined by Tim Legler to discuss what's going on in the NBA and everything in and around this final seeding. As we're starting to see it kind of take shape, we're talking about the Lakers potentially trying to get out of the seventh spot. They need help. They've got Houston, and as we saw before, they've got a trip to Indianapolis and New Orleans. Meanwhile, Portland, who they do not break ties with, Dallas, who they do not break ties with. I mean, Portland has got a trip to Utah. They go to Phoenix, and then they've got Denver. Now, the big question is, what are those games going to mean for any of those teams? Utah is trying to lock up the top seed in the West. You know, Phoenix, it still means something if potentially Utah were to lose tonight.
Yeah.
So the Lakers really, truly need those games to mean something for the top seeds in the West.
You say it's taking shape. Is it taking shape? Like, to me, that's the most fascinating part about the NBA this year. It's not taking shape. We really don't know what the Lakers are or are going to be when they get to the playoffs, because we don't know what Anthony Davis and LeBron James are going to be health-wise. We don't know what the Nets are going to be. We think we know what they're going to be. We think those big three are going to be out there finally playing together. But what will they look like? Like I said, when we were growing up, you watched the Larry Bird Celtics, the Magic Johnson Lakers, the Bad Boys, the Jordan and Pippen Bulls. You watched them play all year long. If a guy got hurt, he might miss 5 or 10 games, but there was no load management. By the time you got to the playoffs, when one of those teams was the clear-cut favorite, you knew they were the clear-cut favorite because you knew exactly what they were. And you watched them all season long. We're going to go into the playoffs having spent half the season watching the Lakers be the Lakers and having spent literally like 10% of the season watching the Nets be the Nets. And they're right now the two betting favorites. Those are the two odds-on favorites, right, in most betting lines to get to the finals or win a championship. I don't ever remember in my life watching the NBA going into the postseason with this kind of uncertainty around the teams that are theoretically at the top of the pecking order.
Caesars William Hill has both of those two teams at the very top to win a championship as well. If I gave you the option of taking the Nets and the Lakers or the field right now to win an NBA championship, knowing what we know as of this second, who are you taking? Are you taking the Nets and Lakers? I'm giving you them both.
Yeah.
Or are you taking the field?
If I get them both, I'll take the talent. I'll take the two teams that when they are at their best, I think are the most talented. And ESPN Plus right now, we're watching Kyrie get that one across the chops. So he apparently is still undergoing tests to see whether or not he's going to be able to be out there on the floor even when James Harden comes back. I mean, there's a very good chance we're going to get to the postseason and maybe even into the first round. And Kyrie, Harden, and KD are not going to have played together more than 7 games this season, which is incredible. But having said that, they are still the most talented team. The 1-2 punch that's the most talented and throw Kuzma in as the third wheel with the Lakers, I still think that is the most talented group. I guess I'll lean on talent. But if there was any other year where you said, you know what, back in the day, I'll give you the Lakers and the Celtics or the field, I mean, you would take the Lakers and the Celtics and you would run. I'll give you the Bulls, like, and the Blazers or and the Stockton Malone Jazz and or the field. It's an absolute no-brainer. Of course, you would take the top two teams.
But you weren't dealing with this kind of, yeah,
who knows?
Exactly. Listen, I can't speak to those. I'm much younger than you, so I didn't see him play. But I honestly just look at it from a standpoint of health, and that's it. And when the Nets can't get their guys on the floor at the same time, it's not even the continuity part that people speak about that bothers me. They don't defend. They don't defend in the least. And I know that we could sit here and look at all of the talent that they have. If they just defended an average amount, I would feel much, much better. The continuity thing doesn't bother me when you're dealing with that kind of talent.
If you look at the Nets' second half of the season, they have been average defensively. Mm. Now, the average that they have been defensively is a massive improvement over what they were for the first half of the season.
But when it went from when they got Harden, like they were above middle of the pack. They were probably top 12 in the league defensive efficiency. Since they've gotten Harden, and I understand when he's been out and all that, since they got Harden, Bob, that number's like 26th in the league.
Yeah, but they've. I'm just telling you, second half of the season, they've been better. That's all.
All right, well, my numbers would say otherwise. But the point of it is this, simply, I don't know that they're going to do enough. I know that Durant can be a two-way player when he wants to be. So this is what has me hesitant. And then there is the fact that you have this injury to Kyrie. And as you alluded to, you don't know what the certainly circumstances are around it. And we're going to get into that more right now with Tim Legler, who joins us via the Goodyear Hotline. Tim, we appreciate the time. ESPN NBA analyst who joins us right now. It's Chris Carlin, Bob Wischusen. Tim, how are you? Because Bob gets angry.
I'm doing very well, gentlemen. Thank you.
Listen,
apologize for being a couple minutes late. I had some other radio I was finishing up, but I'm glad to be on with you.
Not at all, Tim. We wanted to exchange pleasantries because Bob got angry at me last hour.
Chris is an angry guy. Like, he didn't even thank Jeff Passan for joining us, ask him how he was doing. You know what I mean? Like, you at least have to, when a guy that's like you is nice enough to come on,
well,
say thank you for coming on.
It's funny. It's funny you say that, too, because I kind of joke around about that with some of my friends. When they first come over, you're going to get together, have dinner, like whatever. I call it the obligatory chit-chat. Like, you have to stand around the island and act
right,
like
exactly.
Explain pleasantries. And then it's like, let's go watch the game. Like, that's kind of what that is.
Tim, I wasn't wasting your time. That's it. We all know all that right. We're going to say nice things.
All right, we'll get right to it. All right, so I'm going to throw a question at you that Carlin just threw at me, and I guess through the callers at 888-729-3776. If you're out there and want to give us a call and weigh in on this, I'll throw it at Tim Legler. I give you the Lakers and the Nets or the field to win the NBA championship. Who would you take?
So it's the Lakers and the Nets
on
one
both.
Side of the fence.
You
the
get
other
them both.
28 on the other. You're telling me?
Correct.
Believe it or not, I'd probably still take Lakers or Nets, one of those two teams being there standing at the end as the last man standing. I think, look, the Nets, obviously Harden expected to play tonight. We're going to get a better idea of what that looks like. They've had such little time together, but I've looked at them all year as if at any point they get to a place where they're on the court at the same time and they're not limited physically in any way. So forget rust and rhythm and the things that, you know, we make such a big deal about when guys don't play together. Put that aside and just say, are they physically able to do everything they normally can? It's hard to conceive of a team having enough in a 7-game series to be able to figure out a way to guard that team. You're talking about this is the greatest collection of raw scoring talent at the top of a roster in the history of this league. And they just check every box. All three of those guys can beat you on every platform there is offensively. It's hard to imagine if those guys are all not limited physically that they're not the champion at the end of this.
Tim, are the aspects of it, the fact that they haven't played together, the continuity and the notion that maybe they don't play great defense or choose to play any at all. Are both of those things overrated when you're evaluating the Nets if they are on the floor?
I think the only thing that's probably overrated because in the little time that I did see them, they seem to figure it out pretty quickly offensively how they're going to do this. And what they had to do right from the beginning, they had to sort out the primary ball handling responsibilities, and they did that. James Harden is going to be the point guard. It's his team. I saw that the first night he played for this team. It's his show. He dictates possessions. Once they sorted that out with Kyrie Irving, then everything else was going to fall into place because Kevin Durant could go – you could put anybody on the floor with Kevin Durant. You could put the most ball-dominant, over-dribbling, isolation-heavy four players around Kevin Durant. He's still going to get 30 efficiently. So I knew he'd be fine. It was the primary ball handling, how are they going to work that out? And once I saw that, even in that limited period of time, it happened so quickly, how comfortable they were in setting those roles up. That, to me, is overrated. The defensive component of this is not, because forget that you say, well, you know, look, Harden and Kyrie have never been known to be great defenders. It's not really about that. It's more about playing defense collectively with five guys requires an awful lot of communication. That requires repetition. It requires being, you know, very tight on your coverages and talking through situations. They just haven't had a lot of time to do that. So that is not overstated. That actually will be a bigger challenge to them than anything they face on the other end of the floor.
Tim Legler with us here on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, Bob Wischusen and Chris Carlin in for Barton Hahn. All right, Legs, let me give you the Lakers scenario, kind of an A and a B, and tell me which way you're going if you're them dealing with Anthony Davis and LeBron and how those two guys might be banged up as you head towards the playoffs. Do you push them through these last three games to get out of any kind of a play-in scenario? Or, with no guarantee you'll get out of the play-in scenario, are you worried about maybe pushing them too hard or resting them a little bit and saying, you know what, we're better off having those guys closer to 100% even if we have to play a play-in game?
No, I think you play them. I think you push them. I think you try to avoid it at all costs, because if you can avoid the play-in and you get to a spot where you now can like take a deep breath knowing that you are going to start off with a seven-game series, it's almost like a prize fight where you say, you know, a certain fighter, if you can just avoid getting knocked out by a haymaker early, then as the fight goes on, you're just going to get stronger. That's who the Lakers are. So if you get into these one-off situations, particularly, you know, you get a team like Golden State, okay, so let's just say that ends up being the 7-8. You know, you get into a situation like that, you're playing a team like Golden State that is playing their best basketball of the year. They're playing against a guy that probably requires more commitment and communication defensively to play against than any player in the NBA, and Steph Curry, and he's playing the best offensive basketball of his career. You get that in a one-night winner-take-all, that's a very scary proposition to be in. Okay, so you say, well, you know, if they lose that, they still would have to play the winner of the 9-10. So is Memphis or San Antonio capable of beating them in a one game? Yeah, they are. So, because on one night, anything can happen. You know, a guy could get hurt within the game. Foul trouble. You know, officiating plays a factor every night. So who knows? You know, a certain call doesn't go your way. Coaching plays into it. All of those things. In a one-night game, you know, to survive, that's scary. That's an NCAA-type situation.
You're right.
So I don't care that they have LeBron and AD and all the experience and all that. You got to avoid that at all costs. They've got to get themselves to a situation where you go, okay, look, we're just getting these guys back. They haven't played a lot together. But if you give us a best of seven, ultimately we've got more talent than anybody else on offense and defense. If that's the case, even if we start off slowly in a series, we can come back and win, because you're not beating us four times before we beat you four times. But when you start talking about these one night with so many random factors thrown into it, you got to avoid that at all costs if you're the Lakers.
All right, let me throw another either-or at you. And this kind of plays along the theme of me being the happy guy and Carlin being the grump. So we started the show with Carlin being the grump and saying he was just really angry about how the Knicks finished that game last night and lost a game that they probably should have won, should have been 4-2 on the trip, should have solidified themselves at the 4-5. I took the opposite side and said, yeah, you might have been angry about the fact that they lost that game last night, but their season, even giving you a chance to be angry, is awesome because they have been such a great story this year. Where do you fall on kind of the Knicks? Big picture? Or do you think it's fair to kind of micromanage at this point, be angry about what they did last night?
No, I think with this situation, because of what this organization has been, I mean, for a couple of decades, you have to look at the bigger picture and think about the night and day look that we have with this team. And I saw it early in the year, like fifth, sixth game of the year. I was watching the Knicks. I think it was the first time probably I'd watched them that early season, like for 48 minutes. And I remember watching them that night and saying, well, this is a completely different product.
Yep.
You're talking about now guys that care. And that's really what culture is. We talk about culture all the time. It's so thrown around when a new coach comes in, new regime, whatever. But all it really means is you care more. And that's what they looked like. I said, wow, this is a team fighting over picks. They're sprinting back in transition. there is there's not that mentality of it's my turn, so I'm entitled to take a shot because I haven't had one in a while. Like, all that stuff was out the window. And you say, wow, so this product overall is different. Now, what you didn't know early was, is Julius Randle going to turn into a legitimate star, which he is. And he's going to do this for the foreseeable future because of the nature of his game. He plays so hard. He's one of the hard, you know, he's the guy that sets the tone in the weight room, at the practice facility, everything else. And he's got the all-around game to back it up. He's got the versatility to back it up. So no matter what he sees defensively, he's got an answer for it. He's a legitimate star. You didn't know that that was going to take place that early in the year. Well, it has. And now you look at this team and now you say, okay, 7 games over .500. This is a team. It's been not just a great story. They're turning into, you know, a really, really good team. But you're not going to get caught up in how this season ends for the Knicks. You're not going to get wrapped up. Look, as long as they don't go and get swept in the first round and you have a couple of these guys you've been watching all year play really well and they just don't show up, no, then it's a little bit more of a concern. You have a really sour taste in your mouth after giving you a complete turnaround in the regular season. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to battle whoever they get game in, game out in any series. So you've got to look big picture with the Knicks. They're relevant again. And the league is better when they are relevant. And but now the next question is, what's the ceiling for R.J. Barrett quickly? And some of these guys that have been great stories. I'm confident what I'm going to get out of Randle. Yep. Those other guys, I think there's a lot of debate about what the ceiling is. And ultimately, that'll tell you where they are in 2-3 years.
Interesting. Tim Legler joining us via the Goodyear Hotline. Did not realize you were soft, Tim, but that's okay.
Do you see what it means to be happy? Like, he's looking at the bright side. He's a happy person. Are you starting to understand how much better it is to come over to our side and be
this.
Happy?
I will say this, to play devil's advocate. I hear you about the end of the game. That's a horrific possession.
Exactly.
There were two of them.
At the end of the game.
It's a 10-point lead in the
possession.
Fourth quarter.
They had a shot clock violation in regulation with 13 seconds to go in the game, and then it was Barrett from 35 feet trying to bank one in at the end of overtime. Both of those possessions were a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, and look, as a fan of a team, if you're a fan of that particular team, and you're not really necessarily the most objective person in the world when it comes to the Knicks. If you're one of those people, then and now you've gotten a taste of this now. Every night now for a while, you're expecting this team to go out and play well and compete and win and be a great story. Then, yeah, you're definitely feeling horrible about the way that game ended. But I think, you know, being somebody like myself that's, you know, not really – don't have a dog in the fight. I'm just watching the whole league. I'm just watching the whole league, and I don't really care necessarily who wins a given game. I'm looking at the bigger picture of where this franchise has come in 1 year and the leap that they took forward and how interesting they look like they could be going forward. So, yeah, the possession was terrible. The way they ended that game was terrible. As you're a fan, you know, you're really frustrated when the game ends. But if you're looking at the bigger picture around the league, you have to be excited about it.
Tim, awesome stuff. We appreciate the insight, as always, even if you're a little soft.
Way to be happy, Tim.
You got it, guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks very much. Tim Legler, ESPN NBA analyst, joining us via the Goodyear Hotline. Let's get some of the calls in real quick on the Lakers, on the Knicks, on the NBA playoffs at 888-729-3776. It's Chris Carlin, Bob Wischusen filling in for Bart and Hond. Let's hit Roland in Michigan up first. Roland, you're on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. What's up?
Hey, Chris and Bob. I wanted to say that I don't think that either the Lakers or the Nets are a sure shoe-in for the finals. I would take the latter, you know, take the whole league. I think mainly because of the 76ers. You look at the Nets giving up nearly 125 points per game to the Cavaliers. So if you're somebody like the 76ers who have a solid offense and Joel Embiid who's unstoppable and then an amazing defense, I think, I mean, if I was putting my money on somebody, I'd put it on the 76ers.
Roland, appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in. I don't know that I would put it on the Sixers yet, but the Nets have absolutely no answer for Embiid. The thing is, they just have so many weapons if they all have all three on the court.
Or Giannis maybe as well.
Yeah.
And we'll see.
And having said that, I mean, other than that, the Sixers would need somebody else to actually be a big-time offensive threat. Let's hit Jared. He is in Williamson. Jared, what's going on? You're on ESPN Radio.
Gentlemen, how y'all doing? I would pick the Lakers if healthy. If not, then I'm going with the feel. to narrow that down even more, I would go with the Bucks because I think their time is now to strike while it's hot. What do you guys think about that?
I don't love the Bucks to win a championship. Like, they're one of the teams that has the possibility of doing it. But when I take the field, I'm not thinking about the Bucks. I'm thinking more about the Jazz. I'm thinking about the Suns. I'm thinking about the Celtics. Or not Celtics,
Celtics.
No. It's the Sixers. Yep. And I'm thinking of Milwaukee. I don't know. Am I thinking more about Denver? Maybe so. I don't know.
I think the Bucks have a toughness about them that I like. I think Giannis is the classic example of the go-to player without a go-to move. And I think he can be defended, and I think he can be minimized by a good defensive team in the playoffs. I think that's all. I mean, I've seen it happen. We've seen it happen.
I think that's fair, and I think he does not have that go-to move as of yet. Coming up, Bob, you're an aggressive gambler. Always have been. You're always looking forward, trying to make money. We're going to try to make you some money. Beautiful. Week one of the NFL, and of course, the lines are out. We hit them in just moments. It's Chris Carlin, Bob Wischusen for Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bart and Hahn.
Time to make money. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. Chris Carlin, Bob Wischusen in for Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. And it's time for a little segment the fellows like to do. It's called Lunch Money.
I like it. Anytime you can come up with a segment that ties together money and you and I are involved and you add lunch, now we're talking.
Listen, I would advise you only listen if you're interested in making money. If you're not, okay, you do you. It's your journey.
And you can get a bet in now on these games. That's why the spreads are out there.
So let's do it. Week one, Caesars, William Hill, the lines. Bob, week one, you start.
It is so funny that we are doing this now in May. We are picking week one against the spread.
You know what this is called, Bob?
Yep.
Value.
There you go.
You get value.
I think there is value in Bears-Rams. I think the Rams are going to roll the Bears opening day. I think the addition of Stafford with that offense, I think you can make an argument that on all three levels of their defense, the Rams are still about as good as it gets in the NFL. I think on both sides of the ball, the Rams are about as complete a team now that they've added Stafford as there is in the NFL. I think they win that game by a couple of touchdowns. I think they get off to a great start. I think there might be a decent, you know, spiral this year for the Bears. I think it'll be a below 500 team. I think the spread is, what do you have? I think minus seven is what I have. I think at minus seven, I like the Rams on opening day, not even knowing who the Bears are going to have a quarterback. They've got three guys to choose from right now, and I'm not sure there's a good choice among the bunch, leading maybe to Justin Fields making his NFL debut on opening day, looking at Aaron Donald across the line of scrimmage.
You gave me a lot there. Gave me a lot. Give me the Dolphins getting two in New England against the Patriots. And I know all the free agents that the Patriots brought in, and I know there are questions about Tua Tagovailoa. The Dolphins are headed in the right direction. I'm not convinced that the Patriots are, even though they went out and spent this offseason. I listened to a certain portly talk show host who at the time told me that you don't win by spending. That talk show host was you.
Yeah, I was wondering why you were looking at me.
Exactly.
And obviously when the word portly came out, that seemed to be when the, you know, the side eye came.
Hello, yep. Pot, it's the kettle.
All right, so what spread do you have over there on Broncos-Giants? I think this is very, very interesting.
That is the Denver Broncos, according to Caesars William Hill, Bob, laying 1 point in East Rutherford against the New York Giants.
Without knowing who the quarterback will be.
Correct.
I am going to speculate Giants in this game. I'm just going to bet that Aaron Rodgers is not the Broncos quarterback to start week one. I think it'd be a better year for the Giants. I think they've helped themselves. I loved the trade. Loved the trade and the value that they got getting Kadarius Toney and an extra number one next year from the Bears. Pardon me. I think the Giants are a better team this year, and I think they win on opening day. And if the spread's won, they just have to win the game.
Let's head to Nashville, Bob, as we often have on many, many bachelorette party weekends. Arizona is getting 2.5 against the Titans. And did I miss it? The Titans were a playoff team, were they not? The Titans are going to roll in this game. I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is long for the Arizona job. I think he'll make it through the season, but I'm not convinced much beyond that. I believe in the Titans, and when the spread is less than a field goal, I will happily lay those points.
Okay. My last one, there were a bunch here that I thought were really, really interesting, but the one that jumped out at me is Seahawks at the Colts. Carson Wentz takes over. Again, for a team that I think is more complete than people are giving them credit for in the Colts, I think the Colts win that game. I think they find a way to get it done at home on opening day, and I think Carson Wentz, I'm kind of looking at Carson Wentz as the AFC version going from the NFC to the AFC, the way I'm looking at Sam Darnold going from the AFC to the NFC. I think both of those quarterbacks can still do this at a high level, and I think they are both going to experience success this season.
I'm not convinced Carson Wentz could succeed anywhere else but Indianapolis with Frank Reich. I honestly believe that is the only spot where he could really reclaim what he was back in 2017, if possible. Last one for me, Texans at home getting 2 points against the Jacksonville Jaguars in Trevor Lawrence's debut. Think about that for a second. The Jaguars are 2-point favorites on the road in their rookie quarterback's debut. They don't think Deshaun Watson's playing for the Texans.
Yep.
And they're right, because there's no reason to think that he will be one way or another in week one this coming year. Bob, I absolutely love the Jaguars, and not just Watson. The Texans are a bad football team. I just don't believe in them in the least. And I don't think if Tyrod Taylor's the quarterback, I don't think if it's anybody, I don't think if it's Davis Mills is the quarterback, that they're going to have any chance in that game. I think Lawrence will put up big numbers in his first career NFL start.
Are the Texans going to be the worst team in the league this year? If you had to bet?
They're right there. They're right there. Absolutely. I think they could be. I think they could be. Do you think so?
Yeah. I mean, because they have zero answers right now at quarterback.
They have zero answers really anywhere.
In a bunch of
spots.
At
the moment. It's a major problem. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Your week one winners, if you want to give those out. Plus, Knicks, Lakers, NBA. Let's hit the phones once again. Kwashi is in the taxi, and he joins us right now on Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Kwashi, what's up, bud?
Hey, my man. Thanks for taking my call, man. You know, I want to thank you for giving the Knicks a lot of love, because the fans seem to forget, you know, in the beginning, we didn't expect all this. You know, they played beyond, and they really could have won that game, you know?
They should have won.
In a way, it's good for the young players to help toughen up their mind what lies ahead, you know? I think if they get to face the Bucks, their defense, I believe they could take the Bucks. I don't know about Philly, but yeah, they could take the Bucks.
I don't
want
see
the
it.
City just give them love.
No. See, I don't see it at that point, Kwashi.
And yeah, don't get greedy, Kwashi.
It's not a knock on the Knicks that they couldn't beat the Bucks. The Bucks are a more talented team, and while Bob was correct in saying a few minutes ago that you still wonder if Giannis has a go-to move and they will defend him probably as well as anybody could, I still think it's going to end up being too much. The Knicks at this point, and not shockingly, you completely misrepresented what I was saying earlier.
When?
When you were talking to Tim Legler.
No, I nailed what you said. You were angry about last night's loss.
Yes, and I was also...
And you were like, you're disturbingly angry about last night's loss, losing perspective
once again,
what this season has been for the Knicks and what you should be concentrating on, which is a much more wide-angle lens view of how good they've been.
And now you've done it again. What I was saying was, yes, angry that they lost the game, probably going to be a little bit more annoyed next week about it if they end up in the sixth spot playing the Bucks as opposed to in the 4-5 matchup, because that game will be the reason why. And then I still can appreciate the fact that I am angry, that I am not apathetic about the situation.
No, it's a good thing.
And I'm not even a Knicks fan, but I'm invested in watching them play. That's all a good thing. However, because I am invested, because of all that, why can't I live in the moment when I haven't had a moment to live in for the last 8 years?
Longer.
Really, longer.
I mean, there was a blip on the radar one year with Carmelo. The last time a Knicks fan could feel even remotely like this, Marcus Camby and Latrell Sprewell were playing for
it. Exactly. So in the moment, I should appreciate it, shouldn't I? I should take it for what it is, because I sure as heck know they don't come along very often. They haven't recently. I don't want to take it for granted.
All right, so let me ask you this. At what scenario in the postseason do you have a right to be upset if, like, A, B, or C happens to the Knicks? To me, the only way you could be upset is if they just don't flat out show up in the first round. Or you might even have the right to be upset if they play the Hawks in the first round and lose.
That's where
because
I would be.
I do think that they have the ability to beat the Hawks and get to the second round if they get in the 4-5.
That's where I would be upset. If they lost to the Hawks, if they lost in 7, no, I wouldn't be upset. If they lost to the Hawks and really didn't play well in the series, if they lost in 5 games, that would absolutely just be a sour end to an amazing year.
It won't happen. I thought last night, even in a loss, they showed the character that I think they've got. Now, I get it.
I can't do that when you're up 10 in the fourth quarter.
But the end of the game aside, when you go on a road trip like they went on, when you win a game the way they won it on Sunday afternoon against the Clippers, last night had 20-point loss and get on the plane and go home at the end of a long trip written all over it. You're already playing with house money. 3-3 on the trip is better than anybody thought you would do. To go 4-2 is unthinkable. And they battle tooth and nail and grind out to the last possession of every game they play. You know, there's just a lot to be said for that last night, even in a loss. There is.
Oh, they're gritty. They're scrappy. Big picture. Think of all those things.
But both things can be true. You can be upset about the way the end of the game played out, but still understand that's a really hard game last night at the end of a 6-game trip.
I will think about the big picture in July. That's a nice time to think about the big picture.
You can think about that now with where they're over under this year was 21.
Right.
They're going to win 40. They're going to double their over under. That's incredible. When was the last time that happened? When was the last time a team in a shortened season, 10 less games than we're used to playing, they're going to double their over under?
Here's all this tells me. You settle in life. I don't. I don't settle.
Well, look at me.
Look at me. I don't settle. And look, I'm
taking this picture.
Far worse than you.
I settle.
Boy, there is.
My wife settles. She's really the one that settled.
All right. You didn't need to do that to be politically correct, just in case. 888-729-3776. 888-SAY-ESPN. Is one NBA star returning tonight or not? We get the answer, and it may not be what you think it is. Next, it's Carlin, Wischusen, and you filling in for Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN+.
Bart and Hahn.
On ESPN Radio, ESPN+, brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. So there were reports earlier today that James Harden would not play tonight, that he was officially listed as out when the Nets play the Spurs. And now it appears as if that has reversed course. He's officially listed as probable at the moment. And it sounds like, according to most reports, that James Harden is going to make his return tonight for the Nets against San Antonio in Brooklyn. And when you factor that in, it's not funny, but it's just weird how these guys seemingly can't get on the court at the same time after that injury that Kyrie Irving suffered last night when he took the elbow right to the face, and it was still inconclusive on what that injury to his face was. Every time one of them is ready to come back, somebody else ends up going down.
Yeah, it looks like Kyrie has been ruled out now for tonight's game based on that shot. So, and he might not. I mean, who knows? Who knows if he will play in any of these last couple of games that they've got. You may get to the I was doing Nets Suns about 2 weeks ago with Doris Burke, and I was asking her, all right, just, you know, what's your biggest concern about the Nets going into the postseason? Is it chemistry, getting those guys to play together? She thought that the first round matchup in the playoffs would almost act as training camp for these guys, that they will get that kind of feel of playing together out of the way because they can make their mistakes in round one of the playoffs because of the lack of depth in the East and still beat whoever they play in the first round. And now you get to the second round, and now we're talking about a different level of an opponent, but you will have four or five games under your belt, assuming those guys are all healthy and able to play in the playoffs together.
Chris Carlin, Bob Wischusen in for Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline, coming to you live from the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. I'm not worried about the cohesiveness factor with them. I'm really not. I'm kind of more worried about when they need to make a big stop in postseason games in the second round. Are they going to be able to come up with the big stop that they need? I'm really suspect of what they are defensively when I factor in, and I know people have tried to sell me on this idea that Kyrie's played better defense this year. I mean, marginally.
Look, I'm one that was trying to sell you a minute ago on the fact that they've gotten better defensively. If it comes down to the Nets having to get big stops to win, they're going to lose. I mean, to me, the Nets are going to win because they just flat out outscore you.
What's the number that they have to put up in the playoffs to win consistently?
Well, I think the playoffs, just by its nature, gets to be a little bit more half court and a little bit more low scoring. But, I mean, I think they're going to have to be in the one teens. They're going to give up 110 points a game, 115 points a game. They get to the upper one teens, low 120s. Which, the way these three are capable of scoring, that's got to be the formula. They're not going to be sitting there going, hey, let's tighten up our defense, guys, and let's kind of run a basketball version of the Oklahoma drill in practice so we can get ready to beat some teams like 95-92 in the playoffs. No way. They're going to try to flat out outscore people.
That's what they're going to have to do. 125 is the number. If you missed any portion of the show, you can always find both hours of Barton Hahn posted daily as a podcast, available wherever you listen to podcasts. It's Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.